Okay, good evening, everyone. This week's a double parasha, Parashas Matos Maaseh, Tavshin Ayin Ches. We're going to go a little bit out of order. And we're going to start on page 902, which is Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, chapter 31, verse 1. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, "Nekayim nikmas b'nei Yisrael, take vengeance for the children of Israel, me'es ha-midyanim, from the Midianites, achar te'yasef alamecha, after that you shall be gathered unto your people." The Midianites were very much involved in the downfall of the Jewish people, with the Jewish men being seduced into idolatry. In last week's parsha, Pinchas being rewarded for killing the Midianite princess who is cohabiting with the prince of the tribe of Shimon. And now Hashem is telling Moshe to take the vengeance of the Jewish people from the Midianites. Vayidaber Moshe el ha'om le'mar, Moshe spoke to the nation saying, "Heicholtzem mi'etchem anashim la'tzava, arm from among yourselves people for the army, v'yi'al Midian, and they shall be upon Midian." Let's say Nikmas Hashem b'Midian, to bring the vengeance of Hashem in Midian. So the first thing that we would notice is that when Hashem speaks to Moshe, he calls it the vengeance of the Jewish people. When Moshe speaks to the Jewish people, he calls it the vengeance of Hashem. That's one point. Then the pasuk continues, elef lamata, 1,000 per tribe, lachomate Yisrael, for all the tribes of Israel, tishlechu la'tzava, you shall send it to the army. Vayimasru me'alfe Yisrael elef lamata, and they were handed over from the thousands of Israel, 1,000 per tribe, shenibasar elef chalutzei tzava, 12,000 men armed for the army. Vayishlach oisem Moshe elef lamata la'tzava, Moshe sent them, the 1,000 per tribe, to the army. Oisem ves Pinchas ben Elazar HaKayen, they, meaning again those thousands per tribe, and Pinchas the son of Elazar HaKayen, latzava, to the army. Uchlei HaKodesh v'chatzotos hatrua b'yadai, and vessels of holy, and holy vessels, and the trumpets of blowing in his hands. So the pasuk says that Moshe sent them, the 1,000 per tribe. And then the pasuk says again, they and Pinchas ben Elazar. Why does it say them twice? Moshe sent them, 1,000 per tribe for the army, they and Pinchas ben Elazar. Why the repetition of the word osam they? And as Rashi comments, Pinchas is being sent together with the Klei HaKodesh, with the holy vessels. Which holy vessels are we talking about? Rashi says we're talking about the Arun, the Ark, which is not referring to the ark that was in the Mishkan of the Tabernacle. It rather means the ark that was actually made for going out to war. And the other holy vessel mentioned in Rashi was the tzitz, that head plate that the Kohen Gadol, that the high priest wore, that set on a Kodesh Lashem, that was taken also to war. Rashi explains the reason why it was taken to war. The tzitz was for a very specific purpose. That was because at this war with Midian, Bilam was present, and Bilam, through his sorcery, was making the five kings of Midian fly, and he was flying along with them. And the way that they would basically be shot down, so to speak, was Pinchas would flash the tzitz at them, and they would fall to the ground. So the tzitz was serving a miraculous purpose in this war. Okay. So I want to start with a question that the commentaries focus on, and that is the fact that it says Moshe sent 1,000 people to the army, and he sent Pinchas along. So the Das HaKeinim of Alatayismus asks, why didn't Moshe go? And the way the Das HaKeinim asks the question is that Hashem said to Moshe, he said to Moshe, Nekom Nikmas, this is not again Pasuk Beis, Nekom Nikmas B'nai Yisrael, take vengeance for the Jewish people. Moshe is being told, take vengeance. So the Das HaKeinim says, well, that means Moshe is supposed to take the vengeance. That means Hashem was, it would sound like Hashem is telling him that he should be going to war. He should be the one leading them out to war. It's not like Moshe never went to war. We know when they fought Sicha in last week's parsha, Moshe was an oak. Moshe was the one who killed Oak. So it would seem, says the Asakenim, that from the wording that Hashem is saying to Moshe, Moshe should be going out to war, as he's told, take the vengeance for the Jewish people, and he's not going. And instead, he sends others. Answered the Asakenim, basically that Moshe understood that although Hashem is telling him take vengeance, that means take charge of the situation, but it doesn't mean that he himself should go. How does Moshe know that? Because Moshe knows, being that he lived in Midian, he's in this godl of Midian, grew up, where he had to escape to Midian, he lived there, he developed in Midian, he made himself a family in Midian. Omar Einar Bedin She'ev Goyd Bohem, Shem Usserli Taivas Hana. I am not going to betray them for the kindness that they did for me. As the saying goes, Bir Deshatzes Mina, the well that you drank from, don't throw dirt into it. You benefited from the well, treat it properly. Moshe says, I benefited from Midian. I was able to live there. I was able to survive there, to escape there. And therefore, they benefited me. Therefore, I am not going to harm them. So that's Moshe's lesson in Hakaras HaTov, in gratitude. Which means Moshe understands that the debt of gratitude that he feels for Midian, or that he should be feeling for Midian, that itself says that although Hashem says to him, take vengeance, which would seemingly mean that he has to be involved in it, directly involved in it, Moshe understands, no, that's not what he's supposed to be doing. He's in charge, he's going to direct it, but to actually be the one to inflict any kind of harm on Midian, that can't be him, because they deserve his gratitude, he benefited from them, and the water that you drank from, don't throw dirt into it.
But in some sense, one can argue that he benefited from the Egyptians too. They raised him.
The Nile.
Well, that's because okay, so answer your own question. Did Moshe hit the Nile?
Well, he did, but he fought.
Wait. The point is that the first three plagues he actually didn't. Now, it's not exactly the reason that you give. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't hit the water because the Nile saved me, right? I don't bring the frogs out of the Nile because the Nile saved me. I don't hit the ground because of the fact that the Egyptian that he killed was buried in the ground. But the idea of sparing Egypt, that you don't find. But the truth is, Moshe's not sparing Midian either. He's just saying, I'm not going to be involved. It's a good point that there are makas, there are plagues that Moshe was involved in, and yeah, he doesn't go that far in that situation, basically because Hashem tells him he's got to do it. But the other ones, where there was a much more, so to speak, direct benefit from them, that he doesn't do. But you're making a good point. And the point that you're making really relates to a very important idea, or an obvious question. Just let's think about Moshe. Moshe ran to Midian. He had to escape to Midian. Did Midian, open the doors for him and say, you can come in? Like, did he apply at the border, and the border agent said, you can come in? We'll give you asylum? No, he just went in there. There's a medrash that says that actually, the first couple of years he was in Midian, he was in jail. They jailed him. And again, in a more basic idea, it's not like the Midianites welcomed him in and took care of him. Unless you want to argue, well, at least they didn't hand him back over to Egypt, but... You know, it doesn't seem like they didn't go out of their way to help him. At the same time, Moshe understands, but I did benefit from them. I benefited from their country. And when a person feels gratitude is something you should automatically feel to something that you benefit from. It doesn't make a difference if that thing meant it or not. You benefited from it, you should be having a feeling of gratitude to it. That well of water, you drank from it, right? It didn't offer it to you. Right? It can't stop you. It doesn't have any choice. You benefit from it, though. You have to feel gratitude to it. You benefited from Midian, and therefore you couldn't bring harm unto Midian. There's a beautiful story that's told with Rabbi Yisrael Glistman Zatzal, who was originally one of the members of the Vilna Beis Din before the war. He was a very young man. Eventually he emigrated to Israel, had a yeshiva there. And if I'm not mistaken, but this is how the story basically goes, and that was that Rav Glistman always insisted on watering the flowers in front of his house. He himself always made sure to water the flowers. Why? Because when he escaped during the war into the forest, how did he survive? From the plants on the ground. That's how he survived. And because of the fact that it was what grew from the ground that he survived on, he always felt that he wanted to do something back. He wanted to water them, wanted to take care of them. Moshe is not doing harm against them. Here is an example of someone who actually benefited, did something for, something inanimate that benefited him. And then the examples we brought before are the same. Moshe gained from the Nile. Again, the Nile didn't have a choice in it or not, but he benefited from it, and therefore it's not appropriate that he should be the one that's going to be bringing the plague upon it. Okay, so that's the first part of the Das Kanim. The Das Kanim says that Moshe couldn't go out to war because he felt, since I owe them gratitude, I cannot be the one to bring harm upon them. Okay. Then the Das Kanim says, Das Kanim Bala Tosfos says another interesting thing. Then he says, V'yesh oimim she'ein zeh midin she'neskado boi Moshe, she'zu b'tzad moya, var achshav hi charva. Actually, this Midian and that Midian are not the same place. The Midian which Moshe fled to bordered the desert of Sinai, whereas the Midian which is featured in connection with Bilam and Balak is situated in the Arabian Peninsula bordering the Red Sea. I don't know map in front of me very well, but it's two different places. The fact that they're both called Midian, we kind of think there's a connection between them, but it's not the same place. Okay? What makes this Ishmael say that? I'm not sure. But then the Das Kanim brings down this opinion. It's not the same Midian. It's a different Midian. Okay? Then he says, and the Das Kanim says, which is similar to what Rashi says, Das Kanim says, V'lama shilach Pinchas. So why did he send Pinchas? When Rashi phrases the question, he should have sent Elazar. Why did he, Elazar the Kohen Gadol. Why did he send Pinchas? That's not how the Das Kanim says it, but they both want to know. Okay, so, but now the question is, why Pinchas? And on that, the answer is that the Misha Hischa B'Mitzvah Oymim Lo Yigmar. He started the mitzvah, and we tell him complete it. V'hikah Midyanis, v'hikah Chigmar Mitzvah Asai. He was the one who killed the Midyanis. He's the one who started avenging the honor of Hashem against Midyan by killing Kozbi with Zimri. So Moshe says, he started the mitzvah, he finishes it. And Rashi says it the same way. Rashi says, why didn't Elazar go? Elazar was the Kohen Gadol, which I'm assuming Rashi means, why didn't the next in line go? After Moshe, Rashi doesn't discuss Moshe. Why not? But I would assume what Rashi means to say, well, if Moshe's not going, then the next in line should be Elazar. Why Pinchas? The answer is, he started the mitzvah, we tell him, finish it up. Okay, so I just want to mention a question that I have here, and possibly bring out a certain point, and that is, so the Das Kanim starts up saying, why didn't Moshe go? Because Moshe had a karas of gratitude to Midian. Then it says, yesh oimim, it's not the same Midian. And therefore, if it's not the same Midian, then what? Is there something that's supposed to follow that? Yesh oimim, it's not the same Midian. So to me, what should be the next step? What should be the conclusion from that? It would seem to me that it would sound like he's saying that this first explanation about showing gratitude shouldn't be applicable. It's not the same Midian. So the whole idea of gratitude shouldn't apply here. All right, so that means he's basically, if you follow this argument, then that's not the same Midian, then you don't have that answer anymore of showing gratitude to Midian. Okay. But then the Das Kanim says, and why did he send Pinchas? Answer is, Pinchas started the mitzvah, finish it. So, what's that? Is that the new answer? Is that the new answer as to why Moshe didn't go? The answer is, you know why Moshe didn't go? Because he said, you know, Pinchas should go. I could have gone, but it makes sense for Pinchas to go because he started the mitzvah, he should finish it. Is that what he means? If that's what he means, I'm a little bit bothered by the wording, like, why does the Das Kanim say, and why did he send Pinchas? Sounds like it's a new question, and why did he send Pinchas? If this is a new answer, the new answer is, but Yesh Loimar, you know, we should say that he said Pinchas because Pinchas started the mitzvah finishing. So it's not clear to me. The wording really would sound to me that there was one question, why not Moshe? He gave an answer. Okay, now we know it's not Moshe, why is it Pinchas? The answer is, he started the mitzvah, he should finish it. But then the Yesh Oimim that said, but it's not the same Midian, right? We said that would seem to be a reason to not say the first answer. So where are we here? Do we have the first answer? Don't we have the first answer? So I don't have a good explanation, but I will tell you that I was listening to a shiur, and the person giving that shiur was quoting this Das Kanim, and the way he seemed to understand the Yesh Omrim, I don't know if he wasn't addressing it like the way I'm asking it, but he seemed to be saying, because he was right, Tzvi Zimmerman, he's from Chicago, and he seemed to be saying that the Yesh Omrim is not refuting. It's not refuting the first answer. It's telling us a little piece of, you know, it's telling us a little tidbit here. It's telling us not the same midyan, but it doesn't necessarily mean to say that the first answer fell off. So the answer would be, because if they're both called midyan, then they probably all originate from the same place or from the same ancestor. So therefore, Moshe is saying, not only because I have gratitude to the midyan that saved me, I now have to have gratitude and not show harm to the relatives of those who saved me. It's not the same place. Not the same place. One is one place, one's another place. But if they share the name midyan, then they're probably related. And that would mean to say that this whole idea of Moshe showing gratitude to the midyan that saved him, that he survived in, that gratitude extends to their relatives, and that I can't bring harm to their relatives either. And then if you learn like that, so again, you have Das Kanim asking, why didn't Moshe go? The answer is gratitude, either gratitude directly or gratitude to the relatives of those that he benefited from. And then why Pinchas? He started the mitzvah, we tell him, finish it up. Okay, that's one thing. The Aruch Hayim addresses the question in a little bit of a different way. He asks the question, why was Pinchas chosen to go and not, who do you think should have gone if not Pinchas? What other personality, famous personality amongst Moshe's inner circle who already fought a war for the Jewish people? Who's going to fight wars for the Jewish people? Right? He's already been designated to be the leader, the next leader, Yoshua. Right? Last week's Pashti was designated the successor to Moshe. We know that he fought a war with Amalek. So the Aruch Hayim says, why send Pinchas and not Yoshua? So he gives two answers. One answer is, Kizehu asher kinei v'asa v'hem shvatim v'floyim v'samachu b'koyach mufla l'hashmid kala umah hatameya. I understand Aruch Hayim is saying that we already saw that Pinchas was zealous to punish Zimri and Cozbi, and his ability to do so was a miracle. It wasn't a simple thing to do. There's a Medrash that talks about the many miracles that took place for Pinchas when he went to kill Zimri and Cozbi. Many miracles took place for him to be able to do it. And being that Pinchas already was, so to speak, given the miraculous power to be able to destroy, to kill the Midianite princess, that already means that we know that he's already endowed with this wondrous power to be able to defeat the Midianites. Because it wasn't a simple war, as we're going to see soon from the Malbim. It wasn't a simple war to fight the Midianites. And therefore, Pinchas, who's already established as the person that has this tremendous divine assistance and intervention to be able to punish the Midianites, to punish the Midianites for what they've done, in the fact that he was able miraculously to kill the Midianite princess, that already says that Hashem already is behind him in being able to do miracles through him to destroy the rest of Midian, to take the vengeance of the Jewish people and Hashem from them. That's his first answer. The second answer is a very interesting one, and he says like this. He says, Gam efsher shachashmeisha v'kitro ga'anashem alam aloi michu bezaynim agam shem nikiyim. Okay, says Aruch Hayim, we know that in Parshas, at the end of Parshas Balak, many of the Jewish men are straying after the Midianite, the Moabite women, and there was a plague. People were dying because of it. And Pinchas came and stopped the plague. So whoever's going to war right now is not somebody who committed any sin. Right? He didn't commit any sin. This person didn't do anything wrong. They didn't sin with the Moabite women or with anybody. And they were going to war. That's how they were able to go to war. There's only one problem, says Aruch Hayim. Why didn't they do anything to stop those who did? they should have, the Aruch Haim is assuming, Aruch Haim is saying, that even those who did not participate in that sin of Baal Pa'ar, they didn't protest either. They didn't try stopping whoever did. And therefore, here they are going to fight the Midianites. They're going into war. War is a dangerous time. And at that point of time in Shemaim, there could be a kitchery, there could be a complaint. These guys are the ones who are going to go and fight war against the Midianites to avenge the honor of Hashem and the Jewish people. They didn't do anything the first time around to protest what they were doing. So what right do they have to go to war and to succeed in war against them? So how did Moshe counter that? V'shalach ha-mekane kines Hashem b'mesiris nafsha. You see what he did? He sent along Pinchas. Hey, you can't complain about Pinchas. He was the one who really did it. So by sending along Pinchas, that would now basically take away any kind of kitchering, any kind of complaint against those going to war. V'ulai kizehu ma'ashadikdik b'maymar oisev es Pinchas. Remember, we started with a question that in Pasuk Vav, it read, Vayishlach Yisam Moshe, Elof Amata Latzava, Moshe sent them, the 1,000 per tribe, to the army, Oisev Es Pinchas, they and Pinchas. So why again they and Pinchas? Says the Aruch Haim, they and Pinchas means to say what they fell short in, Pinchas was able to fill that gap. They, those people going to war, who didn't protest against those who did follow Baal Pa'ar, they will be, any negativity that would come about through them would be countered by Pinchas, who's going along, because Pinchas clearly stood up for the honor of Hashem, was ready to sacrifice his life for doing it, and his merit being there would now protect everyone to be able to be successful in war. So therefore, says the Aruch Haim, the Aruch Haim starts off, again, he just phrases the question different. Why are you sending Yeshua, Pinchas over Yeshua? The answer is, number one, Pinchas, we already see the tremendous, miraculous power Hashem has given him to be able to defeat the Midianites when he first killed the Midianite princess. And number two, in case there be any kind of complaint in heaven against the armies of the Jewish people going to fight war over the fact they didn't protest against those who did sin previously, that would be countered by the presence of Pinchas, who clearly stood up in the honor of Hashem at the highest level.
So who would protest?
The angels in Shemayim. The Mekatrik, the Satan would start complaining.
But another explanation is we should have been given a chance to Yeshua and go to war.
Yeah, but when you mean it's saying that was their tshuva, you mean?
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. But at the same time, I don't know if it was a volunteer. You know, it says, it was a volunteer. I mean, he commanded the tribes to give over 1,000 people. So, like, were those 1,000 people volunteers? I don't know. I mean, I you're trying to say that was their way of making up for it. Interesting. Okay. Now I want to share with you the Malbim's explanation of this entire situation of the war. And the Malbim, as I started off, is seemingly addressing the issue. Rashi deals with this also, but the Malbim seems to be offering his own explanation as to why Perek Lamed Aleph begins, Nekayem Nekmas B'nei Yisrael, take the vengeance of the Jewish people. That's what Hashem says to Moshe. And Moshe says, L'seis Nikmas Hashem B'Midyan, to take the revenge of God in Midyan. Why does Hashem call it one thing? Moshe calls it another thing. So the Malbim says like this. Malbim says, the fact that Hashem says to Moshe, Nekom Nikmas B'nei Yisrael, take the vengeance of the Jewish people. The Malbim understands the vengeance of the Jewish people means not just for the Jewish people, but of the Jewish people. Meaning the Jewish people are the ones who are taking the revenge here. They are taking the revenge. But then Moshe, and if we're calling it the revenge of the Jewish people, which means that we are associating the revenge with them, then that means that it's meant to be a war, right? We're sending them out to war. They're fighting against the enemy, taking vengeance against the enemy. When Moshe says to take the vengeance of Hashem in Midian, the connotation of that is, who's taking the revenge? Hashem's taking the revenge. Which means this revenge is going to be done by Hashem. That means it's going to be a miracle. And says the Malbim, so there's two things that have to happen here. We need a revenge that is associated with the Jewish people, which means they're doing it, and they are going to be the ones fighting the war. But there's going to be a very strong element here of Hashem's vengeance, Hashem's actions. So we have a very strong element of miracle here. And the reason is because, says the Malbim, is that Midian was a very big country. Looking at the people taken captive after the war is done, and the Torah tells us the number of children that are taken captive. It's a huge amount, which means it's a very large country. There's a lot of people there. You can't fight them with 12,000 men. That's the whole army, 12,000 men. You can't fight, you can't conquer a country like Midian with 12,000 men. It doesn't happen. And the answer, says the Malbim, that there was this combination. There had to be a certain level of the Jewish people fighting the war, the Jewish people taking the vengeance. That's your soldiers. But at the same time, it's not going to happen through them. It's going to be a miraculous kind. It's going to be a miraculous victory. And the Malbim says that Moshe Rabbeinu understood that. Moshe Rabbeinu understood when Hashem spoke to him, and Hashem said to him, take the vengeance of the Jewish people. From the fact that Hashem says to Moshe, take the vengeance of the Jewish people, and he doesn't say, tell Bnei Yisrael to take revenge, that Hashem is alluding to Moshe that he is heavily involved here. Moshe's merit is heavily involved here. And there's going to be a combination here. There's going to be the vengeance of the Jewish people. But the fact that Hashem doesn't say to Moshe, tell the Jewish people to take revenge. It tells to Moshe, take the revenge of the Jewish people. Moshe understands that this is not a regular taking of revenge. It's going to be a revenge that involves the Jewish people, but it's a revenge that, to a certain degree, involves him, which means his merit, which means a miracle. Therefore, when Moshe speaks to the nation, he doesn't say anything in the name of Hashem. He tells them 1,000 people per tribe. Doesn't say Hashem said 1,000 people per tribe. It's Moshe says 1,000 people per tribe. So Moshe is doing this because Moshe says he understands it's got to be Nikmas B'nai Yisrael. It's got to be the revenge of the Jewish people. This has to be revenge associated with the Jewish people. That means they're doing the fighting. Okay, so we got to send soldiers. But Moshe knows it can't be the number of soldiers that under normal circumstances would be enough to win a war. Why the number 12,000? Why 1,000 per tribe? That's a separate discussion. But it's not going to be, Moshe knows, intentionally is not sending enough soldiers to be able to win the war, because the war is meant to be won in a miraculous manner. It's meant to be Nikmas Hashem. It's meant to be the revenge of Hashem. That is also, that is accomplished through Pinchas. Pinchas goes. What?
Well, I wanted to ask, if Hashem runs the show there, why does it matter who is in charge of the Jews?
Well, so, we says the Malbim that Pinchas, right, who again, he calls Pinchas a Malach Hashem, an angel of Hashem, right, he was the one in charge of the Klei HaKodesh. He was the one in charge of the holy vessels. And as Rashi says, those holy vessels are what helped them win the war. So the miracle was going to, the agent to perform the miracle directly would be Pinchas, who already performed the miracles, was already involved, was a Malach Hashem for what he did, was an angel of Hashem for what he did, and therefore he was the one that had the power to use the Klei HaKodesh, the holy vessels, in order to bring about the miracle. So that is how. So that's the whole setup here, it says the Malbim. That's how everything is coming together. Now, he points out that, again, as we said, in Pasuk Vav, it says, Vayishlach Oisem Moshe, Elach Lamata Latzava, Moshe sent them, 1,000 per tribe, to the army, Oisem Ves Pinchas, they and Pinchas. Now, Rashi already comments on these words, Oisem Ves Pinchas, they and Pinchas. That teaches us that Pinchas is equal to all of them. The repeat of Oisem ve'es Pinchas, they and Pinchas, is meant to bring out this idea, they and Pinchas, Pinchas is equal to all of them. And the Malbim says, this is a rule that we have in a number of places, that if you talk about like many, and then you specify one right after, it means to say that there is the many, and the one is equal to the many. So by saying Oysam ve'es Pinchas, it's saying they and Pinchas. Pinchas is equal to all of them. Why? Because Pinchas is the one who's making the miracles happen. He's the conduit for the miracles that are really making this war be a success. At the same time, says the Malbim, that it's Oysam ve'es Pinchas. You know, just like Pinchas is equal to them, they to a certain degree equal to Pinchas. Because at the end of the day, it has to be Nikmas B'nai Yisrael. It has to be the revenge of the Jewish people. There has to be something being done by them. There has to be something that relates to them in this revenge. That means they have to participate. Pinchas can't do it either by himself. Pinchas can't go out on his own and just flash the tzitz and win. Because Hashem wanted to be Nikmas B'nai Yisrael. It has to be the revenge of the Jewish people. Therefore, they have to be involved. So Pinchas, to a certain degree, needs them too. There's a parallel. You've got, as Rashi says, and which is probably the primary focus, Pinchas is equal to all of them. But there's a certain element, says the Malbim, where they are equal to Pinchas, because without them, this can't happen, because it has to be Nikmas B'nai Yisrael. So what's happening here, according to the Malbim, is that there are two elements of war going on here. There's a somewhat natural element, and there's a miraculous element. The natural element is there are 12,000 soldiers involved. Warfare is a natural engagement, but 12,000 ain't enough. And Moshe knew that, and Moshe did it on purpose, because he also knew this had to be a miraculous war, a war that was a Nikmas Hashem, the revenge of Hashem. The conduit for that, the agent for that, was Pinchas, who he calls a Malach Hashem, an angel of Hashem, who had the power to perform the miracles through the holy vessels that were brought along. So that's the Malbim's approach to this. Okay. Now, I mentioned to you that Rashi asks the question, why was Pinchas sent? And Rashi says, Pinchas was sent because he started the mitzvah, we tell him, finish it up. Okay. Then Rashi brings a Dabar Acher. Rashi brings another explanation. Why was Pinchas sent? And on that, Rashi says, Shahalach linkayim nikmas Yosef avi imay. He went to take the revenge of Yosef, his mother's father. Pinchas, somehow or another, stems from the family of Yosef. Shenemar v'madonim machru oisai. We know who the ones who took Yosef out of the pit and sold him. Midyanim. They're, according to Rashi, they're the same people. They were involved in the sale of Yosef. How do we know Pinchas' mother was from the family of Yosef? It says Elazar married from the daughters of Putiel. Elazar, his father, married from the daughters of Putiel. Who's Putiel? Mizera Yisrael, Shabitim Agalim, Lavedas Kachamim. Putiel comes from the word putim, to stuff, to fatten. We know Yisrael used to fatten animals for idol worship. Why that's important to mention here at this point, we'll get into. Umizera Yosef Shapit of Yitzray, and it's from the family of Yosef, from the seed of Yosef, who argued with his Yitzhahara. He fought off his Yitzhahara. So Pinchas is the son of Elazar. Elazar's wife, Pinchas' mother, is a descendant from Yosef somehow. And now Pinchas is basically going to take revenge against the Midyanim for the fact that they sold Yosef into slavery. They were involved in that. So the Gur Aryeh, the Maral, in his commentary on Rashi, says that this does not mean that Pinchas got up and said, "You sold my great grandfather into slavery. Now I'm getting back at you." Says the Maral, "They're long gone. It's long over. They're not the same people." So Rashi does not mean that Pinchas was just going now to stand up for his grandfather's honor over the fact that they sold him. But it means something deeper, something much deeper.
They also saved his life.
Okay. But apparently that wasn't their kavana. And then you have to know how far all these things go. But so the Maral says like this. It's not a concept that I can fully explain to you, but it's a very interesting approach. And he says that Pinchas understood, or everybody understood, or Moshe understood. Moshe understood that looking back in Chumash and looking back that Midian was heavily involved in the sale of Yosef, that's not a coincidence. There's something much deeper there. If Midian harms Yosef, That means Midian stands for something that's the opposite of Yosef. Midian represents, stands for something that is in battle with Yosef. What Yosef stands for, Midian's against, and therefore that's why Midian landed up bringing harm to Yosef. Because the Maharal's wording is, where the Maharal says it is, She'ilo loikein, if it wouldn't have been so that there is this kind of inherent battle between Yisra and Yosef, it would not come up, the tale of Yosef would not have come about through Midian. Came a gagal and chayver la'adam, because in Shemayim, what they only bring about a harm to a person, only through someone that's against that person. Kind of a mystical idea, right? If Midian harmed Yosef, it must be that Midian inherently stands against Yosef. And what is that inherent battle? What is that inherent conflict between the two of them? Well, let's take a look. Yosef was very controlling over his morality, right? Ashes Potiphar, the wife of his master, tried to seduce him. Yosef held back. It was pitpit b'yitzra. He argued with his Yetzirah. Yosef stands for morality. Midian is the opposite. Midian let their princess go and cohabit with the prince of the Jewish people to bring down the Jewish people. They didn't make any, this wasn't like an official shidduch, prince and princess. They let her go, and she went out there, and she got him. And according to many commentaries, we know it's the Moabite women and it's the Midianite women. But Midian, from what they did, is very clear that morality was not important to them. That's the inherent conflict between Midian and Yosef. Yosef stands for purity, morality. They stand for immorality. And therefore, they were the ones who sold Yosef into Mitzrayim. I don't think it means, well, they thought that way. But if that's the way things happen, that's the way things work. That's what's happening behind the physical scene, the natural scenes that we see. There's a spiritual plan going on. There's something deeper going on behind the scenes. That deeper thing going behind the scenes is Midian and Yosef are in inherent conflict to each other. Therefore, Midian is the one that harms Yosef. And now when it's time to take vengeance against Midian for their immorality, who's going to be the one to do that? A descendant of Yosef. Because now it works the other way. Now who's going to bring harm to Midian? He who represents the opposite of Midian. If Midian is, and especially in this case, Midian is now being harmed, being punished for their immorality, who's going to be the one to perpetrate that punishment for their immorality? The one who represents morality that was always in conflict with Midian, and that's a descendant of Yosef. So therefore, when Rashi says that Moshe sent Pinchas to take revenge, the revenge of his father, it's not a revenge, you hurt my dad, you hurt my great-grandfather, I'm going to get you for it. But rather, it's the whole idea that they, because they were this inherent conflict, they're in this inherent conflict with Yosef, they were the ones who therefore sold Yosef. So now, the same idea goes back on them. When it's time to punish Midian, who is going to punish Midian? The one that is inherently in conflict with them. Yosef is inherently in conflict with Midian. Because Yosef is morality, they're immorality. Yosef, or a descendant of Yosef, now is going to be the one that's going to be involved in punishing them.
But what about Yosef's brothers? Weren't they involved to sell them?
That's true. But we're talking about now, we're talking about Midian's involvement. And from the point of Midian's involvement, and there, this is again according to Maral, we're not punishing them. It's not a punishment. It's the same concept that we had when the Midianim sold Yosef. The same concept now is going to apply when the descendant of Yosef punishes them. Okay. All right. So that's that. Let us now. Let's turn back. We have enough time to do this. Let's turn back. page 900, beginning of the parasha. Vayidaber Moshe Rashi Amatayis Levnei Yisrael Leimar, and Moshe spoke to the heads of the tribes of the Jewish people, saying, Zeh HaDavar, this is the matter, this is the thing, this is the word, Asher Tziva Hashem, that Hashem has commanded. So this is a very interesting word. Zeh HaDavar, this is the thing that Hashem has commanded. So Rashi comments on these words, Zeh HaDavar. Moshe Disnabe B'Koyamar Hashem Kachatzayis HaLayla. We find Moshe prophesizing with the words, Koy Amar, Koy, so says Hashem. Moshe says, B'Koy Amar Hashem Kachatzayis HaLayla. So says Hashem, around midnight, Hashem will smite the firstborn. So Moshe is, when he introduces his prophecy, he introduces it with Koy Amar Hashem, so says Hashem. But Navim Nisnabu B'Koy Amar Hashem. And other prophets also use those words as their introductory words, Koy Amar Hashem, so says Hashem. Moisef Aleyem Moshe, Moshe has more, in addition to them, in addition to what they were, in addition to their prophecy, Moshe Nisnabi B'Loshin Zeh HaDavar. Meaning Moshe also prophesied with the words Zeh HaDavar. Moshe prophesied with Ko, so says Hashem. The other prophets prophesied also with saying, so says Hashem. Moshe was more than them. Moshe was above them. Moshe was beyond them because Moshe also prophesied with Zeh HaDavar. This is the thing. All right, so we have an idea of what's going on here. This Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, like this says Hashem, and Zeh HaDavar, this is the matter. It's pretty clear that Zeh is something more clear, more direct, and Ko is something is more indirect, like this. So, Zeh is, this is what Hashem said. So we're trying to bring out that Moshe seemingly has a more clearer form of prophecy. He says, Zeh, this, and they say only Ko, like this, so. The problem is, if the whole point is to say that Moshe is at a higher level, of prophecy with other prophets, because he says, Zeh HaDavar, this is the thing, so then why did Moshe say Ko by Makas Bechoris? If Ko represents a lower level of prophecy, we're trying to say Moshe is a higher level, why did he use the word Ko by Makas Bechoris?
Maybe they're just two different kinds of prophecies.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know what I mean, but it could be the different type of transmissions to him.
So we're not going to. That's going to be our second answer, and that's the approach that the Maharal uses. The first approach is we're going to say is from the commentary on Rashi called Mizrahi for a minute. Rabbeinu Leo Mizrahi. Rabbeinu Mizrahi says that what it means basically is like this: that yes, when Moshe was first prophesizing, Moshe used the word Ko. We know that when we talk about Moshe's prophecy is called Aspaklaria Hameira. That means basically a clear lens. Moshe sees his prophecy in its full clarity. Other prophets are seeing their prophecy through an unclear lens. They know what's going on. They get the gist, they get the point, but they're not seeing it with clarity. You know, if I take off my glasses, I know it's you, but I can't see it. I don't see you clearly, right? My glasses are on, see it clearly. Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is clear. Other prophets aren't as clear. So the other prophets say Ko, like this. Moshe says Zeh, Moshe says this. But there was a point of time where Moshe was just like any other prophet. At the stage of Egypt, which we could call an early stage of his prophecy, he was not yet at the level of Ko Amar Hashem. He was not yet at the level of Zeh HaDavar. He was yet at the level of this. He was at the level of Ko, like this. So Moshe, Rashi is saying, Moshe prophesied with Ko. There was a point in time at the beginning of his being a prophet that he was basically like everybody else, and he used the word Ko because he was not at the level of Aspaklari in the era of clarity of prophecy. Eventually, he got to the point where he was at that level of clarity of prophecy, where he could say, Zeh HaDavar, this is the matter. But other prophets never come to that point.
So if you look at all, sure, people did that, all the cases where Moshe prophesizes, is it chronological that at some point he start using a different construction?
Well, he doesn't use the code. So at that, after, at, meaning, after that, meaning, I would assume, again, I didn't look at everything, but I would assume that this Zeh HaDavar lets us in on Moshe reached a certain level.
Right.
We will assume that that level started. I mean, we could assume it started at a Har Sinai. I don't know exactly what point. But there's a point, and maybe this is, you know, one of the questions on the Mizrahi. When did the change take place? When did that change take place? But again, Makas Bechiris is Moshe at an early stage, and then there's a point where it changed. It's a good point. I don't know exactly. I don't care. I'm not sure where to pinpoint exactly when the change took place. The Maral does not agree with the Mizrahi. He quotes the Mizrahi, and he doesn't even bother mentioning about the idea that at one point Moshe was lower, then he went higher. Doesn't even mention it. He brings the Mizrahi. He says, well, then, if Ko is a lower level, then why did Moshe say Ko? And he doesn't even mention what the Mizrahi says about, well, at one point he was at a lower level, and then he went to a higher level. So therefore, the Maral says, as Boris said, that what's happening here is we have two types of prophecy. It's not about so much Moshe and everybody else, as much as what was Moshe doing, what everybody else was doing. And for that, the way the Maral says it, and I will say it over as best as I can and best as I understand, as I understand all the concepts that he's saying, but the way the Maral says it is that all of the prophets who, again, prophesized with Ko, clearly, Ko, when you say so, that means that you do not have Asma Klari Amigira. You don't have the clear lens. And if you say Zeh HaDavar, then you have the clear lens. But the reason why Moshe has a clear lens is because of the type of prophecy that Moshe is transmitting. The other prophets typically, or all of the prophets, I shouldn't say typically, all the prophets are prophesizing about something that's going to happen. Something's going to happen. That means, you know, the world is running in a certain way, and the prophets are saying, Hashem is going to now bring a miracle, bring something about. Hashem is going to decree that this is the way things will be occurring and be happening. It's so to speak, you know, it's so to speak, in many ways, something new. Something not permanent. Something that's not set. But they're telling you that, you know, Hashem is going to make things happen in a certain way. Moshe, typically, was doing something more than that. Moshe's prophecy was primarily doing what? Transmitting Torah. That's what Moshe was doing. Moshe's transmitting Torah. Says the Maral, Torah is a constant. Torah doesn't change. So there's a difference between basically what other prophets do when they're kind of saying things are going to come about, things are going to change, things are going to be different. You know, things seem to be working in a certain way. You have a Beis HaMikdash, says Yirmiyah, if you don't do anything about it, there's not going to be a Beis HaMikdash. Things are going to change. Things are going to change. Torah is not a change. Torah is a constant. Maral doesn't mention this, but the idea was probably based on the idea that, as we say, Hashem looked and the Torah created the world. The Torah preceded the world. It was then a question of, okay, the Torah exists before the world, and there was a certain point of time that he decided that people will act upon the dictates of Torah. But Torah is a constant. Torah, he calls, the word he has a certain phrase, he calls it Seder Metzias Klali Ba'olam, a order of the general existence of the world. Again, I can't say I know for sure what he means, but if I would try to say that it means something like the sun rises and the sun sets, right? That's the way the world runs. And that's the way it constantly runs. Right? That's a fundamental way, a fundamental, basic, constant way of how the world runs. Well, the mitzvahs of the Torah are the same thing. They are the spiritual realm. They're the spiritual existence of the world, of our existence. They preceded the world. So the concepts of Torah that Moshe is transmitting are constants. They don't change. They always have been and they always will be. That is what Moshe does. That is why, says the Maharal, that Moshe's prophecy is aspaklaria mi'ira. You know why Moshe's prophecy is that clear lens? Because, he says, these concepts, these things, these mitzvahs, that are part of that fundamental process of order of the world, they are actually completely, we'll call them sichli, spiritual. There's no physicality involved in them. Because of the fact that they are the foundations of the world, they are the principle, they're what the world runs on, so they perceive the world, they're beyond the world. So they're less physical. And because they're so not physical, when they're transmitted in a pure, clearer way. They're transmitted in a more spiritual way, a more clearer way. What the other prophets are doing, which is talking about a change in this world, something happening in this world, it has this world involved in it. It has physicality involved in it. So then it's a little bit more murky, because it's got the physicality involved. The mitzvahs of the Torah that are those fundamental, I wish I could find a better word for it, but again, the same way you have the sun is a fundamental part of the order of the world. The mitzvahs are a fundamental part of the order of the world. They're a constant, just like the sun rises and sets. And therefore, therefore, as part of this, these fundamental parts of our existence, says the Maharal, they actually they're beyond the physical. They're sichli, they're completely spiritual. And therefore, when they're transmitted through prophecy, completely clear, because it's all spiritual. The other times where the prophets are talking about what's going to happen within the world, the change within the world, well, that the physicality is involved. Physicality is involved, it's more murky, it's not as clear. So when Moshe, again, that's my explanation for it. I can't tell you that's exactly what he means, but I'm trying to give over what I think is the basic understanding, some basic idea of the Maharal.
Well, but clear could have a different meaning in the sense that it is not clear because it's changeable, as you said. It is not clear whether it will or will not happen. Hashem may change his mind.
I don't know.
The Torah, Hashem will not change his mind.
If they do tshuva, it'll change. Yeah, but that seems what are you saying? Because it's changeable, because it's physical, it's changeable, yeah. And therefore it's not as clear because of that, because it could change.
Well, I'm not sure it will happen or not. It's not that clear.
I don't know if that's how you would look at the prophecy from a Navi. It's not clear if it's. I don't know if it's going to happen.
There's a chance.
Yeah, but that means. But the prophecy says, look, if this happens, it will happen. If it doesn't happen, it won't happen. So I'm not sure if that's a lack of clarity. But it's an interesting point you say. So therefore, says the Maharal, you know why Moshe said, Ko amar Hashem emakas b'chairis? It wasn't a mitzvah. He was doing what other prophets do. He was saying, what's going to happen? All right, he's saying what's going to happen. That kind of prophecy is never asplakar me'ira. That's never the clear one. Because that's not what it is. It's a different type of prophecy. It's not about a difference between Moshe and other prophets as much as what's the prophecy about? What's the message? If the message is about this world and changes in this world, how Hashem is going to do things in this world differently than we expect, okay? That's dealing with the world. That's not a clear prophecy. Not even to Moshe is it a clear prophecy. Because it's not, that's not because the clarity, the Moshe's clear prophecy is the prophecy that Moshe had when he was transmitting mitzvahs through prophecy. Okay. I want to jump to the end of Parshas Matos, where we talk about how the tribes of Reuven and Gad asked to stay, not to enter Eretz Yisrael, but to stay on the other side. So let's turn to page 910, Pasuk Hey. We'll quickly read through the Pesukim. So what happened is, Vayomer Matzeinu Chen Beinecha, the tribes approach Moshe and they say, if we have found favor in your eyes, Yutanas aras hazis labadachal achuza. Let this land be given to your servants as an inheritance. Al tavrenas hayardein. Don't pass us over the Jordan. What does Moshe say to them? This is unacceptable. You're going to dissuade the Jewish people from crossing into Eretz Yisrael, just like the spies did, and we're just going to go through the same problems we had before. So what do they say? Vayikshu elav ayimru. This is Pasuk Tazayin. So again, they approach Moshe and they say, we'll build things for our cattle here, and we'll build cities for our children and families here, and we will go to war with our brethren, and we will not return to our land until all the land is conquered. Moshe says, if so, okay. So the question is, so they made a request for Moshe, you want to stay here. Moshe slams them. And they say, we're going to go fight war, we're going to settle our families here, and we're going to go to war. So what happened here? What happened? Was what happened that, you know, they said, we want to stay here. Moshe says, can't do that. It's going to mess everything up. And then they said, okay, we'll go fight the war. Meaning originally they didn't mean to go. But after Moshe rebukes them, they say, okay, we will go. Which it seems that the Aruch Chaim learned that way. Or, actually, you could learn that no. They never meant not to help their brethren. But they said to Moshe, we want to stay here. Moshe rebukes them. And after Moshe rebukes them, they say to him, well, we meant to go. Which means nothing really changed by then. They made a request. Moshe rebuked. And they let Moshe know so that...
He just misunderstood.
He didn't hear it from them, I guess. He didn't hear it from them.
They didn't explain it enough.
They just said one thing. We want to stay here. And Moshe therefore rebukes them, and they say, we're going to go fight war. And that was what they always meant. So many commentaries ask, well, if that's what they always meant, so once Moshe starts telling to them, you're going to stay here, you're going to dissuade them, they should have said, excuse me, Moshe Rabbeinu, that's not what we meant. We will go. They should have right away, when they saw him, like basically saying, you can't do this, you're going to dissuade everybody from going if you stay on this side. We'll go, we'll fight, we'll leave our families here and we'll fight with everybody else. We won't settle down until everybody else has settled down. Why did they let him, basically the question is, why did they let him finish the whole rebuke and then they say we're going to go? So the Vilna Gaon in his commentary on Pirkei Avos explains it in the following way. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that talks about there are seven qualities to a chacham, to a wise man. One of the qualities are he doesn't enter the words of his friend. That means he doesn't interrupt his friend. He always lets his friend finish his comment and then he says his part. The Vilna Gaon in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, his whole commentary is he takes each one of the concepts and he shows it in Tanakh. He shows it in the Psukim to say that this is all rooted in the Torah. What is the source for this idea that a Talmid Chacham doesn't interrupt his friend? Right here. The B'nai Gadot says the Gaon, Kashakasim, B'nai Ru'uvein, Shamalahem Moshe, Koyasam Aseichem, V'imtinu Achesayim. And he waited until they finished. They didn't interrupt Moshe and say, no, we never meant to do that. They let Moshe finish. Once Moshe was finished, then they explained themselves. That's the source that you don't interrupt someone in the middle of talking.
This doesn't settle the question of which of the two situations there were, which is
settled. No. So that means that they always planned on it. They always planned on it, but they didn't say anything right away because, you know, Derech Eretz, a Talmid Chacham's Derech Eretz is, you let him finish talking, even if you could have, you know, told him, you know, take it easy, I don't mean this. No, you let him finish. It's more important to let him finish and then explain yourself. Good night.
Letting him finish is sort of